of anything.
Yeah, well, actually, it's not good to do so much service because then you just fry out and you become impersonal to others, right?
Yeah, right. You talk to yourself like that. And then what you do is you go and find others who share that same view.
You know what? I just had a realization that you can't really do a lot of service because then you fry out. What do you think?
I was thinking the same thing.
You know, like attracts like. And then you go find somebody else, and you have a little group going.
Yeah, too much service is bad. You know, you've got to really watch it, or otherwise you become impersonal. You dry up with all that service, you know. Trying to take on all these burdens for Krishna is just not good. You just got to take a step back. Back off a bit. You know, find your level. But as we were discussing the other day, we know what happens when we start finding our own level. We know what that level is. Don't say it. We can delude ourselves in any kind of way. Try it sometimes. You can catch your mind working. You can convince yourself that up is down and down is up. We've all had experiences of thinking someone's wronged us, someone's minimized us. And then later we find out that we had totally misinterpreted the situation. Then we probably just say, well, Eddie, I was wrong that time, but probably I'm always right. People are, they're insulting me. It's amazing what the mind can do. That's why we have Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, to protect us against our own minds. They'll drive us crazy, our minds. Devotional service is not rendered on the mental platform. Anything else? All glory to Srila Prabhupada. As soon as Prabhupada saw the boy, he pointed to the door without saying a word. The boy also said nothing, but got up and left. Srila Prabhupada then turned to one of the sannyasis and said, first he must wash all the pots. He explained that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had always first tested the sincerity of someone who wanted to join by asking him to wash pots. In Japan, Srila Prabhupada rode the monorail. At first, the seat in front of him was empty, and Burjan Das invited Prabhupada to put his feet up there, since the seats were uncomfortably cramped. The empty seat was actually reserved for one of Prabhupada's disciples, Bhanu Das, and the monorail authorities finally insisted that everyone must sit in his own seat. Burjan then again turned to Srila Prabhupada, this time with trepidation. Srila Prabhupada, one of the devotees has to sit down. Will you remove your lotus feet? Yes, Srila Prabhupada replied. I will move my feet so that the lotus-like devotee can sit down. Shatadanya Maharaj was talking with Srila Prabhupada in his room in Mayapur when he discovered that ants were crawling over Prabhupada's desk. Shatadanya stood and began pushing away the ants with light brushing motions of his cloth. Peacefully sitting back against the bolster pillows, Prabhupada watched and commented, before you would have killed them, but now you are purified. What text is it?
Text 1. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
The chapter 6, the demigods and demons declare a truce. Text 1. Has no purport, so ultimately we shall be going to text 8. So in these circumstances, does one read all the verses while everyone's paying rapt attention? And by the way, who is this very fine family that's coming every morning? How did you happen to come upon our
been coming for the past few days. That's very, very nice. The whole family or part of the family? Excuse me? I see. Yeah. Perhaps I should return your visit since it's the time to come in here. Do you live nearby? How is that? Far away? We can discuss afterwards. I always like to meet all the rare, saintly persons of the city. Otherwise, I get kind of bored being cooped up, you know? No, I don't get bored. I'm just kidding. But, you know, it's always exciting to meet such sterling personalities, mother and children, together, making progress out of the icy cold grip of materialism to the warm, loving shelter of Krishna. Sri Shuka Vacha.
Sri Shuka Vacha.
Did we say Om Namo? Evam Suta Suta Ganar.
Evam Suta Suta Ganar.
Bhagavan Hare Ishvara.
Bhagavan Hare Ishvara.
Esham Avira Budrajan.
Esham Avira Budrajan.
Sahasrako Daya Juti. Sri Shukadeva Goswami says, O King Prichit, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, being thus worshipped with prayers by the demigods and Lord Brahma, appeared before them. His bodily effulgence resembled the simultaneous rising of thousands of suns. Well, there's no purport for several verses, so we shall read these verses. Please bear in mind how exciting it always is to hear about the appearance of the Lord and his avatars, his incarnations. Soon here we will be celebrating Janmashtami, Krishna's appearance day in his own form. And right now you're also hearing about the appearance of the Lord in one of his many forms. The Lord was pleased by the prayers of the demigods, if you remember from the previous chapter. Distressed by the victories of the demoniac forces, the demigods offered prayers to the Lord. And pleased by those prayers, the Lord will now appear before them. So you are right in the midst of a scene in which Krishna is appearing, because he's pleased by his devotees, by their prayers. And you've just heard about the bodily effulgence of the Lord, resembling the simultaneous rising of thousands of suns. There's nothing in this material world that will compare to the beauty of Krishna. But just to give you some inkling of an idea, these descriptions are there. So you may now visualize the simultaneous rising of thousands of suns. And in this way, you have some inkling of an idea of the bodily effulgence of Krishna. Krishna's complexion is compared to the hue of fresh rain clouds, darkish blue rain clouds fresh in the sky. Text 2. The vision of all the demigods was blocked by the Lord's effulgence. Thus they could see neither the sky, the directions, the land, nor even themselves. What to speak of seeing the Lord, who was present before them? As you all know from your dedicated studies of our literature, there is a preliminary stage of spiritualization in which you are simply aware of the Lord's effulgence. This is known as Brahman realization. It is very slight spiritual realization compared to all the wonders that are available and the love that is available when one understands Krishna completely. But those who are just beginning their approach to the Lord, they become fascinated by the effulgence of the Lord's body, so much so that they take that effulgence as the all in all. And then if they're envious and critical and unfortunate, they get so caught up in the effulgence, so fascinated by it, that they deride the existence of the one who is the source of the effulgence. You can imagine, perhaps, someone becomes very caught up in one of your creations, but then they begin to criticize you. And they treat the creation as if it's the all in all. Just like, what can you say? You bake a cake, and someone comes and says, "What a wonderful cake! This cake is the everything." And then someone else begins to tell the person about who created the cake, who baked the cake. Oh, nonsense. Such a person cannot exist. It's simply the cake. Naturally, that wouldn't make the cook feel very good. And Krishna is a person. Although Krishna is not affected by the actions or reactions of the living entities, nevertheless, we are affected by the offenses. That is the problem. In the Isha Upanishad, how many of you here have read the Isha Upanishad? Anyone else? Graham, no. Martin, no. Browse. Anyone else? Yoga Maya, have you read the Isha Upanishad? Not recently. Hanuman. Not recently. And not at all. Yeah. Over there? No. I see. You read the Isha Upanishad. Excuse me?
Quotations.
Well, that's a and you? No. Nandaki. Haribo. He's a busy farmer, but still he reads the Isha Upanishad. Okay. Interesting. In the Isha Upanishad, it is stated, Paranmayena Patrena. My dear Lord, please remove the dazzling effulgence so I may see your face. You cannot exchange love with the effulgence of the Lord. Therefore, bhakti yoga means how to understand Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the basis of all other manifestations of the Supreme Absolute Truth. A lot of people are afraid of personalism because, as Prabhupada has explained so many times, they've had such a bad experience being a person in this world that they think spiritual perfection means nothing personal. No qualities, no forms, no activities. But this is all speculation. And in order to dispel that speculation, just like by the rising of the sun, the fog is dissipated. Just to dispel that speculation, Krishna appears as he is. And you can read all about it. In fact, simply by chanting Krishna's holy name carefully every day, you can experience the appearance of the Lord. Because there is no difference between Krishna and his name. Nama Chintamani Krishna, Teta Nirasya Vigraha, Purna Shuddha Nitya Muktam, Vinatam Nama Namina. Krishna is not different from his name. The holy name of Krishna is like a touchstone, spiritual touchstone, Chintamani. That means whatever it touches, becomes all auspicious. Krishna's holy name is eternally conscious and full of all spiritual tastes. It is complete, purna, shuddha, pure, nitya mukta, eternally free from any contamination. Why is all this so? Abhinatsan namanamino, because Krishna's name is non-different from him. This is what the TMers were having a hard time understanding the other night. They said, well, how it is that simply by thinking about Krishna, you can become spiritually realized. It's just, thoughts are just a material process. So how is it that by thinking about Krishna, you realize Krishna? They said, we're interested in direct experience. We just don't want to think about Krishna. That's just material thought processes, electrochemical pathways in the brain, neural activities. We accept that Krishna is the goal. Krishna, Christ, whatever, But we don't see the point in thinking about Krishna. So I pointed out that in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says twice, the only verse that's there twice, Mammana Bhavamad Bhakto, always think of me. So you say that you accept Bhagavad Gita, therefore you must accept Krishna's instruction to always think of me. They said, do you really take it directly like that? I said, well, how else are you supposed to take it? If you want to know somebody and they say, just do like this and do like that, you'll do it if you want to know them. So thinking about Krishna is not a material process, because Krishna is non-different from his name, his qualities, and activities. Therefore, when you are thinking about Krishna, talking about Krishna, singing about Krishna, Krishna is directly present. And you'll realize that in proportion to your devotion. So it was very difficult for them to understand how, by thinking of Krishna, you could experience Krishna. They said, yes, we want to experience Krishna, but what's that got to do with thinking about Krishna? Thinking is just a thought process. Experience is another thing. I said, no, you claim to have accepted Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 15th chapter, you may notice that the mind is included as one of the senses. Manasasthan indriyani prakati karma. Manasasthan indriyani prakati sani karshati. You are struggling in this world with the six senses. The mind is also a sense. So you can directly experience with your thought process. You can directly experience through your tongue. You can directly experience through your eyes, through your ears. Krishna can appear directly to any one of your senses or all of your senses. Through the tongue he comes as the Hare Krishna mantra and prasad, food offered to the Lord with love and devotion. Through your ears he comes as talks about him. Through the nose he comes as fragrances offered to him with love and devotion. Through the eyes he's present as the deity incarnation of the Lord. And he can be present in your thoughts as you meditate on all the wonderful characteristics of Krishna. The tiny living entity does not decide how he or she is going to understand Krishna. Krishna decides how you can understand him, and he makes that knowledge available to you. Krishna says in the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Saivayam Maya Tadra Yoga Prokta Puratana Bhaktosi Me Saka Cheti Rahasyam Ye Tarutama. Arjuna, you are my friend, Saka, and you are my devotee, Bhakta. Therefore, today I'm going to reveal to you the mystery of knowledge about me, how you can revive your relationship with me. Nowhere in Bhagavad Gita do you find a verse where Krishna says, today, Arjuna, because you are my devotee, please figure out your own way of how you're going to know me. No. Krishna says, I will explain to you this ancient science, this secret, mystery of all mysteries, how you can get to know me. So I explained to these young lads that if you indeed are interested in Krishna, you must take Krishna's method for getting to know him. I said, meanwhile, you guys, when you want to know some girlfriend, you are so submissive. Yes? What can I do for you? Oh, really? Sure. Whatever you like, dear. So when it comes to Krishna, no. We will decide our own way. We can understand how by thinking of Krishna, you can experience Krishna. It says right there in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna speaking. Why can you not accept? Sometimes you wonder, why is it people have these blockages in their mind and intelligence against Krishna? It's because of sinful activity. Sinful activity produces an offensive mentality. Because in order to engage in sinful activity, you have to reject Krishna's instructions. Reject the very truth of Krishna as the supreme enjoyer, because we want to be the enjoyer. That's what we discussed yesterday. Therefore, Krishna himself says in the Gita, Yesham ta antikatam papam jananam punyakamanam. Only those who have put an end, antikata, to all sinful activity, they can have something to do with me. Only those who have a background of pious activities, jananam punyakamanam. Te dranga moha nirmukta. Only those who are free from illusion, they can deal with me. They can begin to deal with me. Now we are hearing about the appearance of Krishna, who has been satisfied by the bhakti, the devotion of the demigods. First, all they see is the effulgence. You cannot love the effulgence of Krishna. You cannot even remain in the effulgence of Krishna. It's not your constitutional position. You either relish the material world or you relish the spiritual world. You cannot remain absorbed in the effulgence of Krishna. Now we will hear about Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and their first glimpse of Krishna through the effulgence. There's nothing vague about this description. There's nothing indefinite. You'll see no mention of the word whatever. We're worshiping whatever, you know. Transcendence, God, whatever. No, you get definite specifics in Srimad Bhagavatam. Once someone was talking with Srila Prabhupada, this was in India, and so Prabhupada said to them that, you please tell me, what is God? If you call yourself a devotee or follower of God, please tell me about this God. And the person answered, God cannot be defined, cannot be discussed. Prabhupada just cut him off and said, that means you do not know. In other words, why don't you just say you don't know, rather than say God cannot be defined, God cannot be discussed? We know, therefore we say, and we ask everyone else, if you are worshiping God, if you are dedicating your life to God, then please tell us, what is God? Otherwise, you must learn. Be humble and say, I don't know, and learn. But don't go around saying, just God cannot be defined, God cannot be discussed, God is the whatever, the wherever, the however. Whenever you hear people saying like that, all you have to do is look at their life and see that while they're saying God is whatever, wherever, and however, meanwhile they're absorbed in very definite processes of sense gratification. Suppose I ask you, if I'm talking to an ordinary person, what will you do today? You won't say, whatever, wherever, however. You'll say, no, I'm going to try to find my girlfriend. I'm going to try to find some money. I'm going to try to go to the beach or to the mountains to ski. I'm going to try to enjoy in this way and that way. In other words, your day is full of all sorts of tastes that you're trying to experience. your capacity of trying to be the enjoyer is a very definite thing, although it's an illusory thing. A mirage has existence, even though it's not what you should be absorbed in. So we are very definite about our efforts to imitate Krishna. And we're very meticulous and careful about it, making sure we can accumulate all the qualities and activities necessary to have what we think is an enjoyable day. But when it comes to Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth, oh, who knows, you can't really say. Those who say don't know, and those who say don't know, and those who know they don't say, and all sorts of witty things like that. Which simply means you don't know. And nor do you care to know, but you want to justify your ignorance by all sorts of witty statements. But while making these witty statements, you simply get old and die. And for what reason? You do not know. So knowledge of Krishna is very important. Otherwise, how can we ever agree to give up material existence unless we have definite, specific knowledge of the spiritual reality? Otherwise, we'll simply hear, don't do this, don't do that. Just like we have this fine mother here and her children. Now she's always telling her children, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that. How will they feel? Let's ask them. Is your daughter here? How would you feel if you're all day long, year after year, your mother just said, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that. How would you feel? Why? If all we hear is, do not engage in illusory material activities, after a while we get angry. And that's what people do. They toy with the idea of getting into spiritual practices, and it's a serious spiritual practice. They have to be taught the need for renunciation and detachment from material existence. But without knowledge of Krishna, they can't maintain such renunciation or detachment from material existence, because it seems like they're just involved with negatives. Don't do this, don't do that. It's true you shouldn't do activities of bad karma. You should not do them. But what is the real contribution that Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are making? They're teaching you what you should do. Just like Lord Buddha, he taught very expertly what you should not do. But once you are empty of all negative activities, you must find out what you should do. Otherwise, obviously, you'll be back to the negative activities again, because you have to do something. And that is what Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. Nahi kaschit shiramapi jatu tishtati karmakrit. Everyone is forced to act helplessly. No one can refrain from doing anything, even for just one moment. That means not only are you physically active, but you're also mentally active. Your desires are active too. You cannot stop all this. So we must understand the art, science, and culture of how to act, think, and desire for Krishna. So unless people get knowledge of Krishna, there's no question of spiritual life. Because they don't know what to do as spirit souls. They don't know what their original constitutional position is. Even though the basic moral propositions of Christianity are very good, people don't understand anymore why you should follow them. They think these moral injunctions of Christianity, they're just getting in the way of real pleasure. And why do they think that? Because they have no idea of what spiritual pleasure is. Therefore, they think there's simply this list of 10 commandments which gets in the way of all the fun. And what are we left to do? We're left to do with nothing. Therefore, the conclusion is they think that religion has repressed us in our real pleasure-seeking capacity. And when you get rid of religion and its laws and rules of behavior, then you are free, and then you are psychologically wholesome. They think like this because they have no information of spiritual existence, spiritual relationships. They have no idea of Krishna. But once we begin to hear about Krishna, then all these rules and regulations begin to make sense. Yes, why are there rules and regulations for behavior, for living in this world? So that my path to Krishna will not be obstructed. Just like you're driving on the street and mud covers your windscreen. Obviously, you're going to have a real tough time getting where you're going. In fact, you'll have to pull over, otherwise you'll crash and cause great havoc. So the rules and regulations, codes of behavior, you begin to joyfully follow them because you know they're helping you to remain unobstructed in your experience of Krishna, the reservoir of all pleasure. That's why in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna calls the rules and regulations of spiritual life the regulated principles of freedom. Not slavery. But people today think these things are slavery. You can't do this, you can't do that. They have no idea how by following these rules and regulations, your original spiritual health is revived. And all this speculation is due to the fact that people do not understand Krishna. What's the use in talking about spirituality and religion, God, this, that, the other, if there's no information, there's no understanding? What is the use of it? Without that information and without that experience, you have people just walking around in droves, talking about spiritual this, religious that. But what are they actually doing? They're simply loving the illusory material energy. And they have no choice because there's no knowledge of Krishna. They need to understand Krishna's infinitely attractive qualities, Krishna's infinitely attractive activities, how it is that the unlimited, supreme, absolute truth reciprocates love with his devotees. There is no better definition of God than the all-attractive. Krishna has the qualities to attract everyone and everything. Krishna is unlimitedly deep, infinitely deep in all the personal qualities that everyone's attracted to. Therefore, as Prabhupada writes in the beginning of Krishna book, how many of you here have read the Krishna book? Everyone here has read the whole Krishna book? Martin hasn't. You've read the whole Krishna book? You've read the whole Krishna book? You knew better, right? You knew it wasn't an important chapter, right? So you've read the whole Krishna book? You have? Not the whole book. Have you? You? And you? How about you? interesting. So, in the beginning of Krishna book, Prabhupada writes that you've met persons who are beautiful, you've met persons who have money, you've met persons who are very famous, you've met persons who are very strong, very learned, and you know of persons who are celebrated in this world as being very renounced, like Mother Teresa, for example. But you've never met any one person that is infinitely deep in all these characteristics. Now, when you think about it, we are attracted to these six things, these six opulences. When you hear about someone famous, you're attracted. You want to know about them. You want to read magazines about them. What's that person really like? Just like in Australia, I was on the airplane, and one man was telling me, he was making conversation, and saying, you know, in the USA, you guys like to hear about the politicians and what they're doing. In Australia, no one cares about the politicians. We care about the sports stars. Those are the real heroes. Those are the leaders of society. We want to know what they're doing. And it's a fact. In Australia, the big selling books are always biographies of sports stars. People are attracted. Yes. This person is famous. I want to know about him. This person has great athletic strength. I'm attracted. Or people like to know about movie stars. There's so many magazines, especially the ladies always buy them, about Hollywood and, you know, what the stars are doing. And then knowledge. People are also attracted to someone who's very learned, who knows so much, professor so-and-so. Mm. Oh, you've gone to the uni and you have a PhD. Oh, how learned. Guess what? My neighbor's son is getting his PhD. Oh. These are the things that attract us. When you start a relationship with someone, they have qualities that attract you. Right? We never think that Krishna, the Supreme Godhead, has qualities and he's infinitely deep in all these qualities that we're struggling to find in the material world. So until we understand that attractiveness is the specialty of Krishna, we go on succumbing to material attraction, trying to find water in the desert, longing to be attracted to someone or something. Just like little kids, they want to be attracted to toys. You have to feel it. You want to be attracted to something. It has to happen. What are your mates attracted to at school? Basketball cards, huh? Yeah. Players who are demonstrating great physical prowess. They don't even know, I mean, just from the material point of view, they don't even know so much about the basketball players. They just want the cards, right? It's so funny. Here in New Zealand, you know, it's not that, you know, you're right in the midst of the American basketball scene, but you know, all the kids are wearing basketball hats, the team's on, basketball jackets, you know. They know nothing about these guys, Of course, in America, they're crazy over it, but here, it's so far away, but yet still, everyone's, as you say, they're collecting basketball cards of guys they don't even know anything about. But if you ask them, please become interested in Krishna, who knows about Krishna? Meanwhile, they collect all these cards of characters who they'll never meet and know nothing about. Very few basketball games are shown on TV here, right? But still, they want to collect the cards. This is how the material energy cheats us. So, whether we're young or old, we should revive our understanding of Krishna's attractiveness. Oh, it's gone. Lord Brahma, along with Lord Shiva, saw the crystal clear personal beauty of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose blackish body resembles a Markatha gem, whose eyes are reddish like the depths of a lotus, who is dressed with garments that are yellow like molten gold, and whose entire body is attractively decorated. They saw his beautiful, smiling, lotus-like face, crowned by a helmet bedecked with valuable jewels. The Lord has attractive eyebrows, and his cheeks are adorned with earrings. Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva saw the belt on the Lord's waist, the bangles on his arms, the necklaces on his chest, and the ankle bells on his legs. The Lord is bedecked with flower garlands, his neck is decorated with the Kaustubha gem, and he carries with him the goddess of fortune and his personal weapons like his disc and club. When Lord Brahma, along with Lord Shiva and the other demigods, thus saw the form of the Lord, they all immediately fell to the ground, offering their obeisances. So do you hear anything vague in this description? It's so extraordinarily detailed and wonderful. By reading Srimad Bhagavatam, by coming to Srimad Bhagavatam class and hearing it, no matter who's giving the class, you will lose your feverish attachment for the details of Maya, the illusory energy, and regain your loving attachment for the details about Krishna. Now Lord Brahma will offer his prayers. And we should always pay attention to the prayers in the Bhagavatam because they teach us how to pray. And we are recommended that even better than trying to compose our own prayers is to recite the great prayers of the Bhagavatam, following in the footsteps of the great devotees. Lord Brahma said, although you are never born, your appearance and disappearance as an incarnation never cease. You are always free from the material qualities, and you are the shelter of transcendental bliss resembling an ocean. Eternally existing in your transcendental form, you are the supreme subtle of the most extremely subtle. We therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto you, the supreme, whose existence is inconceivable. And now we have a purport by Srila Prabhupada, just to help us understand. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Ajopi san navyatma bhutanam ishvadopi san prakritim swamadishta. Krishna is describing himself. He's telling you all about himself. Why will we not listen? We're afraid. I don't want to be bound by any supreme. I want to be supreme. I don't want to be disturbed in my little life by any supreme. Yada yada hidharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhutanam adharmasya tadatmanam sridhanyaham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice of descendant of Bharata and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. Krishna says, I come to this world. And when I come, I'm not covered by the illusions of this world. So you may say, there's so much decline in religion now. There's so many problems. Where is Krishna? He says in the Gita that whenever and wherever there are extraordinary declines in religion, he comes. So where is he? Krishna is present here as his name. Kali Kale Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar. In this present age of Kali, or quarrel, darkness, the Lord incarnates as his holy name, Nama Rupa. His form, his transcendental form, is the holy name. Thus, although the Supreme Lord is unborn, there is no cessation to his appearance in different forms as incarnations like Lord Krishna and Lord Rama. Since his incarnations are eternal, the various activities performed by these incarnations are also eternal. The Supreme Personality of Godhead does not appear because he is forced to do so by karma, by ordinary living entities, who are forced to accept a certain type of body. It is to be understood that the Lord's body and activities are all transcendental, being free from the contamination of the material modes of nature. These pastimes are transcendental bliss to the Lord. The word apariganya dhamne is very significant. There is no limit to the Lord's appearance in different incarnations. All of these incarnations are eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. Brahma is telling you that there's no limit to the incarnations of Godhead. They never cease. Earlier in the Bhagavatam, in the first canto, you may remember. How many of you here have read the first canto? First canto? Friend? No? Yashoda? First canto? I mean, the whole first canto, right? Yeah. Yes, first canto. First canto. In the first canto, chapter 3, Krishna is the source of all incarnations. At the end, you find the verse that says, just like you cannot count all the waves in the ocean, You cannot count all the incarnations, all the divine appearances of Krishna. If you want to count the incarnations, better you go to the ocean and count the waves. You won't be able to do it. Krishna is always coming. And what do we always do? Just as Krishna's business is to always come, our business is to always deny. Krishna can't come. Krishna doesn't come. Who is Krishna? I am the enjoyer. I am the center. What are you going to do to please me? Who's got money for me? Who's got pleasure for me? Who's got attention for me? Who's got comfort for me? First, let me figure that out, and then we can see if this Krishna exists, if at all. I need so many things. I need money. I need love. I need attention. I need respect. I need security. Krishna? Why do I need Krishna? In this way, we spend our day going here and there, hoping, won't somebody gratify my senses today? Won't somebody make me feel good? Won't somebody give me some money or something nice? Meanwhile, Krishna is coming, incarnation after incarnation, putting an end to all speculation about the identity of the Absolute Truth. But we are not interested. Not only are we not interested, but if we're most unfortunate, we deny. No, not Krishna. Sometimes I talk to people like that, you know, they come to the Sunday feast, they come to our centers, and they say, I'm interested in spiritual knowledge. I'm interested in the Absolute Truth. I'm interested in divine understanding. So then I say, okay, what about Krishna? And I explain about Krishna. And they just say, no, not Krishna. Why do you say that? No, not Krishna. Why do you have this bias against Krishna? You don't even know Krishna. You're saying, no, it can't be Krishna. We also have to make sure that we don't do that in a very subtle way. Pushing away Krishna's service, pushing away the chanting of Krishna's name, as we focus on life's practicalities, life's necessities. Or, first I've got to find my own level, sort myself out, then I'll be able to serve Krishna. If you're not serving Krishna now, that's the best indication you won't do it in the future. And if you are serving Krishna now, that's the best indication you will do it in the future. We should always remain absorbed in devotional service and sort out our lives around that, the constant presence of devotional service. That is what it means to keep Krishna in the center. Sometimes I'm hearing that some are saying that, well, we need to prepare for grihastha life, and therefore we have to take up a different lifestyle in Krishna consciousness. We have to take up a different approach. So I hear them, yes, we are going to prepare for grihastha life, but then I never see them at the temple anymore. To prepare for householder life doesn't mean you throw away your spiritual life. In fact, the actual way to prepare for household life, for those who are inclined in that way, is that you have to make your spiritual life stronger. It's true, you need finance. As my mother told me when I was a young boy, I never got a chance to use her advice though. She always told me, remember, my dear boy, romance without finance is a nuisance. So it's true. If you householders need money, how much money do you need? And should you throw away your spiritual life while you're trying to get it? So all these notions about, well, I've done my couple of years in the temple. I've had enough training as a brahmachari or brahmacharini. Now I must prepare for my next stage of life. And then you never see these persons. Every once in a while they pop up and you ask, well, what are you doing, Prabhu? I'm preparing for my household life. Ridiculous. There's no preparation for anything without Krishna. Within Krishna consciousness, you can prepare for household life, you can prepare for sannyas, you can prepare for so many things, but you don't forget Krishna. Otherwise, there's no question of preparation. All right, any questions? Any comments? I've been working hard for this padayatra. Trying to please Srila Prabhupada and his Guru Maharaj and all the Vaishnavas. Nandaki has, from his busy schedule, taken off to come down here with those wonderful bullocks. Capture everybody's eyes, so big and happy and healthy and strong. So, no one has any questions? Yes.
I'm not sure that all have help put back on the balance of material natural balance, personal medicine, composition of the business of over 9 now. And in sort of the following, so I wonder, I suggest that I'm not here. All of them need to be done to, at the end of creation, they got to the end of
right.
So what's going on here?
You're in a dormant stage. Deep sleep. That's just temporary. Then you come out again and revive your material desires. So Krishna is explaining in Bhagavad Gita, this goes on again and again. The universe is annihilated. You merge into the body of Mahavishnu. Time for another creation. You come out again. On and on this goes. Some of you get tired of it. That's why Krishna explains in the 14th chapter, Arjuna, I'm going to teach you knowledge that will prevent you from being born at the time of the creation, and it will prevent you from being disturbed at the time of dissolution. That's real knowledge. But we say, oh, I've got no time for that. I've got to deal with my practicalities. What is more practical than knowledge, which will avoid your taking birth at the time of creation and avoid your being disturbed in the time of dissolution? We really don't know what practicality is. This is our big message of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. People do not know what is practical. Krishna is the most practical. Anything else? All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Yeah.